It's the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. Every year, people try to bring in thousands of exotic animals from around the world into the United States. Sometimes travelers are deliberately trying to smuggle them into the country. And other times, people perhaps just don't know that that cute little turtle they found on their beach vacation is not suitable for entering the country, and that there are regulations around bringing in these animals from abroad. But what happens after the animals are confiscated? That's where the Wildlife Confiscation Network comes in. It's a coalition of care facilities across the country that are able to take in those animals, at least for a time. The Niobe Zoo in the Quad Cities is part of that network, the first zoo in Illinois to be accepted into it. And here to talk about the work that goes into this is the assistant director of the zoo, Tammy Schmidt. Tammy, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Listeners, we'll be on this topic for the rest of the hour, so if you'd like to join us, if you have questions about the work the Niobe Zoo is doing on this, give us a call in the next 10 minutes or so, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Tammy, what kind of exotic animals are we talking about here?
What kind of animals are we not talking about, sadly? This is a conservation crisis, honestly. You know, we all, like you said, really, you see something cute in another country. You see something cute in a part of our own country. There are permits that are required to move exotic animals. There are permits or actually laws banning you from having native species from certain states. So you're talking everything from large mammals, charismatic mammals, to invertebrates, insects. Everything, unfortunately, is, if there's somebody out there that has a desire, an interest to have something at home personally, privately, unfortunately, sky's the limit, and there's somebody out there, unfortunately, that will try to get it for you for a price. And it's tragic. It just hits your heart when you get a call and hear that 100 of X animals needs a place to stay because they just were confiscated at one of our borders.
What's a specific example you can give us of that? Like 100, like what's a call you've gotten in the past year?
We started our journey with we've always been, most zoos are the first call someone thinks about right next to United States Department of Agriculture or the extension of your state or even Fish and Wildlife Service. We're all kind of on people's call lists or, oh, wait, maybe the zoo will know what to do with this animal. So we've over time helped with people's animals just locally. In recent years, the critical need for creating either temporary or permanent homes for animals that just are not supposed to be in somebody's backyard has become more prevalent and more serious, really because of online and what we can get. We can purchase anything we want from anywhere around the world, unfortunately. So it becomes kind of a weird, chaotic crisis. And so for us, we're approached to join the Wildlife Confiscation Network last year, and with a lot of vetting, a lot of paperwork, a lot of description of our personnel, our experience, our housing, our financial and emotional commitment, we joined the program, and the very first animals that we were asked to take on were a turtle species. So we brought in six little neonates or juvenile turtles, a Greek or Iberia tortoises, tortoises. And, some animals will come into us under a chain of custody with Fish and Wildlife Service. And so we're on a temporary hold to provide everything they need. We have no idea what their journey has been, but it's typically heartbreaking. They're taken out of their home in the wild, in the forest, along the riverways, wherever. They are typically hidden in the mail amongst everyday items like toys, rolled in socks.
Oh,
it's
my.
just gut-wrenching to think about it. They are dehydrated. They have not eaten properly. Their biotic needs, like lighting and temperature and all the things you can imagine to be comfortable as a human, the animals need that too. So we were called upon to bring those little guys in. We still have them today. They were given to us permanently, and we have gladly taken them on. Then we had moved on to actually locally. There was a confiscation from an inappropriate living situation in our community, and we brought in some birds that needed some help, needed some, you know, changes to their diet. And thankfully, they are thriving today and had been turned over to us permanently.
So I get the sense that sometimes these animals are confiscated. Sometimes it's local, and sometimes you may not even know where I understand there were two peacocks turned over by the Scott County Humane Society after they were found roaming the streets of Bettendorf in the Quad Cities area.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we're top of mind. When somebody thinks about an animal, we're thinking about our furred friends, the cats and dogs that may be feral in our streets. But it's kind of crazy when social media in the Quad Cities is following two random peafowl, really peafowl at that point, because we didn't know if they were male or female. They were kind of they became street hobos in Bettendorf. People were following them, and there were sightings. And thankfully, somebody was able to usher them into a garage. And Scott County Humane Society is a partner of ours. We work together on occasion, and they gave us a call and said, "Hey, can you help us out? No one's claiming them. No one, you know, they're not going to make it." Like, they're a pretty hardy bird. They probably would have made it. It sounded like they became street tough over time, but we brought them in here, and their feathers just blossomed with the right diet and the right care that they needed. And they both, yes, are peacocks, and both have very strong wills. And they are here now. So you don't know where you're going to get the call and who from. With our confiscation network, we get a call amongst other facilities in the United States that have joined that may have capacity to take certain animals in. And it's gut-wrenching when you have to say no. I'm unfortunately a person that wants to say yes all the time, to the chagrin of our staff.
Mm-hmm.
However, we all take this. We didn't get into the profession that we are in as animal caregivers to say no. You know, we want to say yes to everybody, but we also want to make sure we're doing the responsible things, knowing that we have the space, the capacity, we can get a hold of the foods they need, and that we're going to create those biotic requirements for them when they come in. It's even more gut-wrenching when you're talking about primates. Mm. And we have brought two species of small primates in that it's just, you know, thankfully they're all thriving right now, but you just are shocked at what you might find in somebody's back seat when they're going through Border Patrol.
Wow.
And you're right when you said at the top there, some people don't know. They're like, "Oh my gosh, look at that." They may feel like they're rescuing somebody.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not an actual animal trader. There are traders out there, and they are in it. I'm not going to judge who or why they're doing the things they're doing, but it is devastating the environment, all of our global environments. We need the endangered species parameters. We need to work together as a global family to make sure that these animals are being taken care of in the best way we can. We're talking about a $7 to $23 billion a year process in an illegal trade that unfortunately rubs shoulders with other crimes that have to do with drugs and human trafficking and weapons. So this is scary, and we want to say yes to everything. So at some point, I'm going to just be locked out of the zoo because I keep saying yes, but we will say yes as we can. We even have animals that we can't even talk about because they are under a chain of custody. They're active crime situations going on, and we work very closely with our our governmental partners who work so hard and work so tirelessly, because when they find those animals, they're seeing the worst of the worst, and then they're taking care of them until we can find homes for them. So I applaud them and the work they do, because it has to be even more gut-wrenching when they find them like that. It's just, it's going to take all of us to work together. And I think when someone thinks about bringing a pet home, whether it's a dog or a cat, a primate, an unusual snake, a crocodile, really think about this and do your homework. Do you have everything that you're going to need to take care of that animal? You know that there's permits in your state. There are laws in some municipalities that say no way to crocodilians. There's laws up and down every state, and they're all different. And then think really deep. Do you really, really want that animal? Are we doing right by that animal? And hopefully the answer is a good answer for that animal, and we're thinking not once, twice, three times, four times. Is an exotic pet really the right thing to do? Maybe support your local zoo. Volunteer at your zoo. Go to school and become an animal caregiver. Go to school to become a wildlife, researcher, and understand what those animals need versus having them sitting on the couch next to you watching TV and popcorn.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. I'm speaking with the assistant director of the Niobe Zoo, Tammy Schmidt. And Tammy, we just have a couple minutes left, so I just wanted to hear your thoughts on, well, actually, if you could talk a little bit about what it's like to bring in animals that are so different, whether they're primates or toads or tortoises, and what's the ultimate end goal for any animal that you take in?
I mean, the end goal, when you hear that there's somebody that's in need, you need to immediately make sure that we or whomever's taking them in is going to immediately kick in and provide the highest standard of care as quickly as possible. What do they need? How fast can you get them here? You got to jump through the hoops to get the permits. You got to make sure the temperatures are right to travel them. In some cases, governmental agencies have literally driven them down to us. And then you set them up as quickly as you can. Understand that they're going through a stress, that there's an undefined period of time when they're not going to feel stress anymore. Or there's, we think about what are we going to be able to do to provide the best wellness, overall welfare, and well-being for that animal as quickly as we can, whether they're coming here in a temporary capacity or a permanent capacity. And in some cases, we will be able to talk about those animals right away with people, and sometimes we will have a waiting period. Any animal that comes into our zoo, and I would hazard any zoo in the United States because it's the regulations, is that they go through a quarantine period where we make sure that we're quickly giving them everything they need, but we're watching closely with our veterinary team to make sure things that may be latent that were a disease process or pathology of some kind, a fungus or internal parasites, a lot of that stuff rears up when an animal is stressed. Just like us, we get stressed and we have hives, or we get, pimples on our face because we're super stressed. Animals get all those things too. They just manifest them in a different way, and they can't tell us what's going on and what's wrong. So we have to be amazing observationists, and I applaud my team here, our support networks, our fellow zoos and aquariums and wildlife parks around the country and really around the world. One of the groups of animals we brought in, Hong Kong, Hong Kong Aquarium had the same species come through their borders, and we shared information about how to take care of them because it was a species that no one had really a lot of knowledge about, and we wanted to make sure. And so we're reaching across all of the borders to make sure we're doing the right thing for everybody.
And we'll have to leave it there for today. Tammy Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us. Tammy's the assistant director of the Niobe Zoo in the Quad Cities, which is giving a home to exotic animals from around the world. Tammy, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for listening.
Coming up on tomorrow's show, after President Trump placed tariffs on trade parameter partners around the world, the stock market has rebounded. But what's next for the economy? How are people feeling about where we are? And how might the feeling of uncertainty and instability affect our economy and our mental health? We'll get into that. We'll also discuss a new radio show and podcast called Weather Realness, which answers your questions about the weather and climate. That's all coming up on tomorrow's 21st show. The 21st is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Laylee Nazarva is an assistant producer, and our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow.